from their 2003 album, When the Spirit Returns, it's Lester Bowie and his Brass Fantasy with Bob Marley's One Love. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and it is Free Your Mind Friday. And that's the name of the game. You come to the program today with a decided opinion about something, and then you prove your point and be prepared to defend your position. We have to get into the habit of engaging with each other. The program isn't just about, you know, I come on and I say what I got to say and then I'm gone. It is about what is your position about any topic that you choose to speak about. And in what ways are you engaging with others so that we are creating a community of peer educators? That's the whole point. So when you get on to Lead Stories Free Your Mind Friday, the idea is that we consider ourselves a growing community. And the reason we call ourselves a community is that we are hopefully engaging with each other. That's the point. I want to know what is coming out of your own mind, how you are seeing the world, how you are dissecting our current condition. That is the purpose of this program. 888-874-4888 gets us all started. And we'll start with Jay from New York. Hello, Jay.
How you doing, Eutrice? Good to hear your
voice. I'm hanging in.
How you feeling? You feeling good?
I feel okay.
Glad to hear that. Listen, I just basically was calling up about this whole response and interaction in regards to the behavior of Roseanne Barr. What she said was egregious. But the thing that gets me is how people run to the defense of those that are attacked and don't understand the history of individuals like Valerie Jarrett, the Susan Rice, the Obamas, and the rest of them, who do some of the most egregious things when you put it into context to people of color. You know what I mean? You know, when you talk about Michelle Obama, I'll give you a simple example. What she did to the people in Chicago in regards to medical, when she was the head of the hospital, she changed it to where as there could be no walk-ins, things of that nature. Then when you talk about Jared, you have someone like Jared who totally destroyed Caprini Green and didn't build the necessary housing and do the things that she supposedly promised so that black people could be replaced in their housing. You know, which leads to the gentrification of that area and the displacement of hundreds of families. You know the things that she participated and they participated over in destabilizing Africa, the killing of Gaddafi, the going along with the type of brutalization around the world. You know what I mean? Things of that nature. And we look up to these people as though they are so great and they're such, you know, icons and, you know, they should be idolized and things of that nature. When in the process, they're just as wicked as the so-called white people that we talk about, the Trumps and things of that nature. You know, the honest matter of it is they're no different than Trump and the rest. That's just the illusion that we live under because we're bought and paid and sold to the Democratic Party. So if it's a Democrat that's doing it and they're black, they're supposed to get some sort of pass. You know, And then, you know,
but
you look at
someone
like Susan Rice.
What did, in the times that all these things were going on, this is always my question. At the time that these things were going on and sober criticism was needed and the discussion of the impact of the Obama administration overall and individuals in it, what was the response? What did people say? What did they do?
People that made the critical analysis and the critical responses was weeded out. They wasn't allowed to articulate these things. They wasn't allowed to, you know, put a light to these things. You can look at something like, you know, the Black agenda. The Black agenda was under attack. I mean, you could, even now, when you make a critical analysis in regards to Hillary Clinton, you're annoyed. You know, people don't pay you no mind. They talk bad in a sense about you. They're not looking at the evidence that Charles Martel is putting forward and analyzing it and then questioning those individuals. So here it is. We're like out in the wilderness. You know what I mean? That's what it is. You know, we're trying to point out the contradiction, but it seems like nobody's listening.
Yeah, I understand and appreciate your point of view. However, it does not fully explain or excuse the lack of solid criticism. I mean, that it just doesn't. When I was the editor of a paper, I called it as I saw it. The paper called it as we saw it. And we caught a lot of heat.
And those
by
papers
pointing
do
out
too.
The charlatans who were posing as leaders. We called it all out. We didn't care whether you agreed with us or not. The fact is, we are putting out information that would help the community make far more sensible choices. And the risk is, of course, that you'll be attacked. Always.
Yeah, but the point of the matter is, Utrice, they know that they're going to be attacked. Nobody has a problem with being attacked for saying what they're saying in regards to these individuals. The point is that the public do not want to be analytical in processing the information. You can't force people to process the information. We have to figure out a way to get people to process the information. That's the biggest problem.
Yeah, but you know, you can't wait. As I said, at some point, people will have to make a choice.
But how do you get people to do that, Utrice? That's the biggest problem.
That's it. It's not, you know, you can do only so much. You can do only so much. We just saw whatever day it was, Tuesday, Starbucks shutting down to supposedly conduct sensitivity training and all this other kind of stuff. All the Black people involved in that debacle, all of them involved in that debacle just totally missed the point. They all missed it. All right? So you can't, just the same, you have to comment on it. That's the best we can do. Talk about it. That's the best we can do. And move on. At some point, hopefully soon, they will realize that they blew a very important opportunity and they really disappointed.
Who blew the opportunity, Utrice?
To support them.
Who blew now hold on 1 second. Who blew the opportunity? Starbucks or the so-called Black leaders?
No, the Black leaders.
No. This is where I disagree with you. It's their job. Let me finish this point. It's their job, Utrice.
But I don't want to go over it again. I made my point very clear. Starbucks, within a month, was able to co-opt the cooperation of high-profile black folks and quash any attack.
We're clear on that, but do you understand one thing?
I don't have too much time on this, but we have to move on. There are other people who want to speak. But go ahead.
I just want to say this. My point is, it's the job of those individuals that are being co-opted to do what they're doing because they have one agenda. And you know what that agenda is? To move black people into whiteness. And until we deal with that and realize that we need to be looking forward to sovereignty for ourselves and our people, we're going to be in this quagmire till the end of time. Have a good day. Love you. Bye-bye.
All right. Love you, too. Thank you so much for your call today. Harvey from Berkeley, you're on the air.
Hello, wonderful Eutrice.
Okay. Oh, I thought you had left us.
No. How are you?
Okay.
Good. Well, extra blessings and good health and much happiness for you and your vast Progressive Radio Network audience. And
Thank you.
And thank you. And today I'd like to talk about and engage with you in creating a better environment for us, our children, and future generations. And it seems that our long-term use of fossil fuels is really taking its toll on us, corporate America, and Mother Earth. The burning of fossil fuels like coal, oil, and methane is heating up our planet and causing unbelievable damage to America's infrastructure to the point that financial losses in the private sector, including companies and government-backed programs, hit $134 billion in 2017. And payouts after hurricanes, floods, out-of-control forest fires, and other climate-related disasters are causing insurance and reinsurance companies to be severely exposed to the perils of climate destabilization. And some of the other problems that are caused by our use of fossil fuels are fracking for oil and methane poisons America's freshwater aquifers, as well as triggers earthquakes. Offshore drilling and fracking for oil and methane can lead to coastal disasters like the Gulf Coast oil blowout, which we really want to avoid, especially in our pristine Arctic areas. Our cities, rivers, lakes, oceans are being severely polluted by one-time use petroleum-based disposable plastic products that are causing severe damage to the health and well-being of our marine and aquatic life. And here in California, Proposition 65 tells us that crude oil, gasoline, diesel oil, and other petroleum products can expose us to chemicals which are known to the state to cause cancer, birth defects, or other reproductive harm. And the heating of our atmosphere caused by the burning of fossil fuels is melting both our polar caps and our worldwide glaciers, causing ocean rise, which is threatening our world's coastal cities. So it really is time to divest from fossil fuels that are killing us and our fragile Mother Earth and reinvest in clean, renewable energy, because short-term profits from fossil fuel investments are leading to long-term devastation of our home planet. In other words, where's the profit in a burnt-out planet? So it's, for one, it's time to get star-powered, and I say let's get solar and move on past the fossil fuel degradation of our planet.
All right. Well, thank you for your contribution today. Michelle, you're on the air. Is Michelle with us?
Hi.
Okay. Hello, you're on the air.
Oh, thanks so much for taking my call. One thing that stuck with me when you were doing your awesome analysis of the Starbucks incident and so many other incidences where we're seeing police showing up on the scene, including the incident that happened with you personally, where police appear on the scene, yet there is absolutely zero assessment on their part of the situation at hand before just taking direction from whoever or wherever. So in the case of the Starbucks incident, just taking that manager's request to arrest these individuals, it didn't appear from the video I saw on social media where you had people actually videoing segments of the scene where they arrived on the scene and literally the police were called within minutes, right? So they didn't even have a chance to really be offensive or cause any offense. It seemed to be, walking while black type of scenario. How come the police are not able to be astute enough to stop and say, wait a minute, how can we de-escalate a situation that appears to have been escalated? Isn't that part of their job as well? To not just come and take orders or demands or arrest people, but make assessment. Like, wait, it doesn't appear to be anything really going on here. Talk to other people who are there, who are eyewitnesses, get their take on it before doing something as egregious as arresting someone for just walking while black, basically. It seems like that only happens to black people.
You have a very strong point. This is exactly what I talked about. There were three incidents that I cited in which the conduct of the police was exactly the same. They didn't come in there to assess a situation, to figure out who might be right and who might be wrong. They didn't do any of that. They came into a situation and it appeared that their only response was to carry out the dictates of whoever they perceived to be in power. What does this mean to you? I mean, you cited a very important point, but why is this important?
So it's important on so many levels. For one, so whoever's in charge of those police officers, who I assume do some level of due diligence once they, especially when something's been made public and it's now viral, et cetera, why aren't those types of assessments being done? I mean, you're doing sensitivity training, but you can't do training for police on how to de-escalate situations, which might have been their training in the academy, but clearly they need more of that now. So how come their superiors who, they must be reviewed, whether quarterly or yearly or whatever that process is, how come that's not a part of their overall process where cops are thinking in their mind, wait a minute, let me ask a few simple, as a matter of fact, it's really common sense. Like even if you're not an officer, if you're just a citizen and you walk into a building, a store, and there's a situation going on, do you not use your own common sense to make certain assessments before taking anyone's opinion?
Why would people not use their common sense? Why did the police not use their common sense, you think?
I think because they've been socialized not to. They've been empowered to such a level that, how do you call it? Their overriding level of morals or lack of it override common sense. And
very
knowing they won't be held accountable, doesn't help either.
Very interesting. Would you be surprised to know that this training that they're going through starts at the position or that they went through, basically takes the approach that nobody is really to be blamed for anything. After all, we are all shaped by our experiences, our unique cultures. We are shaped by our daily lives, what we encounter in daily life. So let's set all of that aside and deal with the fact of how we can heal a situation. Do you buy that kind of theory?
Absolutely not.
Why?
Because you're trying to undo a socialization process that most people have experienced from birth, right? To see one group of people as less than human. And we see it play out over and over and over again. And so these corporations that are attempting to fix it through these sensitivity, I loved your response when you said that you'd have to be I forget the line that you used yesterday, but I thought it was just so perfect about, you know, needing this type of training, the sensitivity training. You'd have to basically be, you know, inhuman.
I was making the point that this is a company, and in the specific instance, it's about the behavior of a manager toward two African-American men who were going to meet at the store. They were waiting for the third person. In fact, the third person came just as they were being let out of the store in handcuffs. But that is not the story. That is a very small part of the story. The larger part of the story is that in all these instances, these people are reacting to institutional conditioning. So this wasn't the manager reacting to the two African-American men. It was Starbucks. She was informed, I'm pretty sure, not only by her own social conditioning, there had to have been some kind of policy that emboldened her or informed her as to the extent of her authority, and she exercised it. So when we think that this is about a really silly manager doing something pretty stupid, we have to see the institutional impact here. And therefore, Starbucks cannot be left off the hook. No matter how many sensitivity trainings and whatever it is they conduct, that is the issue. I'm so glad you called in today, Michelle. Thank you.
Thank you.
Khalil from South Carolina, you're on the air.
Okay, so I want to free my mind really about two things. And if I can, I'll squeeze the second one in real quick. But first of all, I really want to free my mind about yesterday with Mr. Hortel. And I understand that that the Clintons may be very guilty, and most likely are. We don't really know yet, because I've gone to his website, and he's not finished his documents. So I would hope that he would use the same expertise and zealotry toward the fire that's burning now, because at the end of the day, it won't matter if she is, or if that foundation is brought up for charges, because we won't have the institutions to prosecute. So it really won't matter. We're dealing with something now that is far greater. And if he is concerned, and we all understand now, and he has shed light on these foundations, it is a scam. It can be a scam. I'll put it like that. So I would advise Mr. Hortel to pick a lower-hanging foundation fruit. You see, and solve that, because this puzzle, and you know, I hear it in his voice. It's a little bit biased. I've been listening to him. I'm very open, but it comes through in his voice, you see. So I would advise him, like I said, you pick a foundation that you can knock down, something real easy that everybody can understand, you see, because we have to put the fee where goats can get it. You know what I mean? So,
well, I have to tell you this. I'm not speaking for him, of course, but I'm saying that what he's been able to do as one individual has been remarkable in unearthing, even if it's just one-tenth of the problem. But as one individual, and he's the same individual who pointed out in 2007 that many Wall Street traded companies were overvaluing their stock. GE was number one on his hit list. So a person who has that kind, it's like Ralph Nader, a person who has that kind of zealotry, you kind of pay attention, because they're going somewhere. I do know next week there's a critical report that is to be released, which will then put things into second gear or maybe third gear, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But that we have countries all around the world also looking at this. This is not a, this is not a small matter. We're talking about billions of dollars, tens of billions, perhaps even hundreds of billions of dollars.
I heard that, and that's money.
Yep.
But you see,
that's big money.
What has been unleashed now is bigger than money. We have a Nazi problem, we have a Klan problem, and we have white supremacy problem in this country and the world. And when this and this cannot go on. So I'm in favor
of
putting
this
fire out.
But this was the Clintons, and I'm taking it from the perspective of the tremendous abuse that the African community worldwide suffered at the hands of the Clintons.
I get that.
I can't even tell you what has happened, what they did under the guise that they were doing good works.
I heard. I'm not discounting that at all. But like I said, this is taking a little bit. Second gear. I'll wait for second gear. But, you know, this is dragging on. And
yes,
I understand it's very thorough. And it's frightening to have your skin melt off of your body. I mean, come on. I understand that. And Haiti, my God, it's a whole nother program. So, okay, well, that's just my opinion on that. And you were wonderful with your Starbucks analysis and talking about Common. And I will say this. The Starbucks situation clearly in Philadelphia. I'm saying Philadelphia. I know Philadelphia. Philadelphia is the largest poor city in the country. Most populous. I don't want to say largest. Most populous poor city in the country. They have a policy. They have a lot of homeless people. Okay, that's one of the wealthiest neighborhoods in the city. And I want to know, was there a sign up? You see, there should be a sign up that says, if you don't purchase, you cannot use the restroom.
That's right.
See, we have a lot of officers out here.
You risk arrest, actually. You risk arrest.
Right. Well, exactly. You see, and we have officers out here who really, you have people enforcing the law who may not even know the law. You know? But this is about race and class, because look how those men were dressed. And we know as black people, a lot of times we are judged by how we look. Besides the suit that we were born with, our clothes. And they were dressed very casually. And I'm not making excuses. I don't want to come off the wrong way. But I'm just saying, in that neighborhood, you know, of course they were wrong. Of course Starbucks is wrong. And that's what happens. That's exactly what happens. But to me, what really tipped the scale in terms of social perspective, the patrons knew that was wrong. That's why they taped it. See, the patrons knew that was wrong.
That's right. The patrons knew it was wrong. And it's still wrong. And we're acting just the way we are being conditioned, because this is a planned approach to solving what would be a very bad mark, you know, on the company. Their thing is to get this fire put out quickly, as quickly as possible. And they've succeeded, I would argue. They've succeeded.
Yeah.
And because we weren't thinking. You know, folks just weren't thinking.
Put your thinking cap on.
That's it. Keep your mind going. They weren't thinking. They were approached. I'm sure they charged a pretty nice fee, and that's what they saw the issue as. You know, I will talk and give a talk, and I will be forceful and whatever. But in the end, they are contractors by the people, contracted by the people they should be attacking. They should be on the side of those patrons who were so troubled by what they saw, but they took a different tact. And that includes the two young men who were arrested.
I like the way you put
that. They have yet to say to the community, thank you so much.
Yeah, it's a shame. And it's the wrong time for that.
Yep.
So, okay, thank you very much.
Thank you very much for calling. David from Brooklyn, haven't heard from you in a while. How are you?
Yes, I've been busy with various medical conditions, and so I haven't had a chance. I want to just talk about a couple of things. One is education, but I can't get away from going back to a couple callers before me with this talk about the police training and analyzing the situation and whatnot. And my thought about that is that no amount of training and no amount of procedures and whatnot that you can come up with at the police department, all of that is trumped by the concept of white supremacy that's ingrained in the police. So, you know, I personally have been a victim of that. I know people who, black people who were attacked, in other words, assaulted by white people, and they called the police, and the police didn't do anything. They just ignored it. I've been in situations like that a number of times myself. I was pointed out by a woman on an airplane in Dallas, Texas, and the police came to arrest me, and I hadn't done anything. I'm lucky that I'm here today. So, you can read a lot of those things in my book, Playing the Game. But so I'm saying that no matter how much training you give these police, and white supremacy still rules. What I really want to talk about after that is this thing about schools. I was looking at the Times. You have to decipher the Times. You have to pick out the propaganda and do a good analysis, anything you read in the Times. And they had a story about the new chancellor of the school system here in New York. And they said in this story that this chancellor went to visit a number of charter schools and said this, according to the Times. He says the charter schools were public schools. Now, here's the chancellor saying something so incredibly incorrect of, the city of New York with the largest school system. And it makes me think about whose pocket is he in. Charter schools, I say, are not public schools. So they are privately owned and run schools using public money. And their rules are very different. So you can't say that they're public schools. So I'm just wondering about this new chancellor. For example, they have different rules. A public school, for example, in a neighborhood, take children in that come in maybe in the middle of the term or something like that. Charter schools don't do that. They get their children at the beginning of the term, and they get approved for the money they're going to get for these children, and that's it. They don't accept children all through the term. That's one thing. And they don't have the same rules in terms of personnel. So to say that they're public schools is ridiculous. And people have to get that through their head that these are not public schools. And the real reason for these charter schools in effect now is to destroy public schools and privatize on this neoliberal situation that we have now. So I think that's very important for people to get through their head that charter schools are not private school. You just have to keep repeating these things, because the fact is that you tell the lie long enough and people start believing it. Like people are in belief that you live in a democracy here, which is not the case. And the same thing with these charter schools. They keep lying enough to tell you that they're public schools and they're really not public schools. Next thing you know, people start believing it.
Absolutely. Thank you. I hope you're feeling well.
Thank you very much.
Thanks. Bill from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Utrice. Good afternoon to you and the audience.
Thank you. Good afternoon to
welcome.
You too, Bill.
Thank you so much. I wasn't able to listen for the past couple of days, but I know that the whole Starbucks fiasco has been a key point of interest. And I think it was on Monday or Tuesday when I was listening, and the whole thing about Common and the NAACP, the actor and rapper Common, and the NAACP legal defense fund being brought in to assist Starbucks has been on my mind. And as you always do, you encourage your audience to do their own homework and research. And this is something that I have done. I dropped the phone. I'm sorry. Are you still there?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, I'm sorry. I dropped my phone. And so what I did, Common has had a long history with the owner of Starbucks going back over 10 years. And to my surprise, I was quite startled by that. And they're actually personal friends. And the NAACP Legal Defense Fund, they have also been involved closely with Starbucks. And anyone can look this up online with actual news articles on that. And so it's not surprising that both Common and the NAACP have been co-opted by Starbucks to come to their aid and defense in quelling this matter. And you're right in that the two young men they had their own interests, but at the same time they could have maintained a certain position of neutrality if they could for a little bit longer. And the last thing I want to mention is that all of these corporations, they have crisis management teams on call 24 hours a day, so that when these things pop up right away. They have experts on the phone, on the ground, to assist and to assuage and to handle these matters. And so that clearly, I think, was the case with Starbucks, and that even before capable lawyers or attorneys could come to assist these two young men, they were already in the sights of these crisis management teams. So that's, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, that, I think, notwithstanding, because we do expect in this day and age that major corporations have developed as part of their arsenal, they
yes.
have developed small cadres and sometimes even large cadres, but they have contacts in communities which would help them put out a fire should one get started. I understand all of that.
Yes.
But I don't think that I'm not interested in what they are doing, because I expect
right.
them to do what they're doing.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I'm interested in what we're not doing.
Yes.
Okay, there you go. We saw here in this moment, you couldn't ask for a more... 100% people's movement. It was wonderful. The
yes.
patrons themselves initiated action because they were so outraged by what they saw. They took the action. It wasn't black people. It was everybody who was there.
Absolutely.
And then, of course, people got involved. More and more people got involved. But this was a fantastic moment, because in this moment, Starbucks was actually on the defensive. And the people had an opportunity, had they proceeded according to, you know, the logic of the thing,
sure,
we would have seen these two men come out of this very differently without making, quote, a settlement, unquote, and without having the oldest civil rights organization in the United States, a legal organization, basically being used as a buffer. No.
Yeah. I think that's the
I'm
most
I'm glad it
shocking.
Happened because we saw it. You know, we witnessed it. So I'm glad it happened.
Absolutely. And we see things for what they are now in terms of what's wrong with the NAACP Legal Defense Fund. They're working for these corporations, in essence. So, but thank you so much for your time, and I'll definitely continue listening to the other audience members. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. Thanks so much for calling. You know, this is the point of the program, and in every instance, I think the inference is think on your own. Don't adopt people's propaganda as part of your arsenal. They're doing what they have to do to survive. And I come back to the central theme here, which is we have to survive intellectually and literally. We have to survive. What are we doing to survive? If we adopt wholesale, without close inspection, what we are being told, we're dead. We might as well be dead. This is a time to be alert and to watch what people are trying to do to herd us into this direction, herd us in that direction, help us make up our minds this way, help us to think that way. It's the same thing. It's the same game. We think that, well, with all this modernization that we've experienced, surely we have the ability to analyze things far better. But we're not. We're not thinking. A very easy set of questions that we should be asking, we're not asking. Why? Because we are encouraged not to ask these questions. And that's what Michelle told us today. Isn't it logical? Well, when you stop and think about it, yes. But who's stopping and thinking about anything? And look at the risks. Now, these things seem a simple matters. They're not really that big a deal. But you look at the implications here, and then you see how big a deal it is. I go back to the three examples I raised, including the Starbucks situation and the situation in which two Native American men were pulled off of a college tour because somebody didn't feel comfortable with them being there. And before you know it, their pockets are being searched and they had to produce ID and checks and double checks as to who they were, although they clearly signed up for the course. They drove more than 300 miles to get there. And then we have the brother just trying to move into his apartment, surrounded by a bunch of armed cops investigating a complaint they received that the building was being burglarized. And the person doing the burglary had a large weapon. Now, in each of these small things, as people would say, these are small things. All these men, it took nothing, just a snap of a finger. They could all be dead. And nobody's thinking, when those cops showed up to investigate the burglary, did anybody just stop and say, well, wait a minute, you seeing the burglar bringing things into the building? That's an unusual kind of burglar. Burglars would tend to be taking things out of the building. They're not questioning. The only concern is that if, in fact, they incurred a problem, it involved somebody from a group that is powerless and most likely won't be able to counter the powers that be. That's what I'm talking about. When this woman said that to the two young men at Starbucks, she was fully aware of her power and her authority, not only as a member of the white supremacist group in this country, but her company further reinforced in her mind that she had greater power, greater influence, greater authority by proxy even than these men and their silly constitutional rights. So much so that she could, when the cops did respond, she was able to oversee the process. You arrest them, and so they did. You charge them, and so they did. And charge them with this crime of trespassing, and so they did. Without protest. So that should signal to us that the understanding of power is very, very clear in one group. It is not at all clear in another group. The group most affected by this system, it's an organized system, but the group most affected doesn't have a clue of how well organized the system is against them. This was not, in any of these instances that we discussed, in no situation were the complaining white women of the opinion that they're probably going way beyond the line here and probably being stupid. No. They operated on the understanding of their entitlement. And black folks just are not getting that. They think, well, we got civil rights. Yeah, okay. see you at the jail in handcuffs talking about your civil rights. We got to get serious. Because this has now been well embedded into the minds of the oppressor class. They get it. They understand it perfectly. We're under the illusions that we have rights. And as I said before, there are those who understand they have natural rights. Natural being, they're white people in this country. They have natural rights. All the rights that blacks seem to think that they have are negotiated rights coming out of amendments to the Constitution. You have no natural rights. If you're hearing that hum, it's my friends, the landscapers. They like my program. They come around just when we are broadcasting. But it is, this is the reality that we're living with. It takes different forms. It may seem to be different, but it isn't. If it is different, it is only more refined and more certain in terms of a predictable outcome. I want to thank you so much for calling in today. I love Free Your Mind Friday. I love hearing what people just think. Just tell me what you're thinking. That's beautiful. And keep on for yourself exploring and thinking about things. That makes you a very difficult target. And that's what we need. We need people who are very difficult targets. We have so many who are such easy targets. And one last thing I'll end today with. I don't normally like to do these things. I never really have. But today is my birthday, and I am so grateful. I am so grateful and thankful, and I'm honored, really, to be in your company. It is a prize all by itself to be among you and with you, and I want you to know how precious it is to me to have spent these years with you. And I want you to know how greatly I admire and respect you and love you for making an earnest effort to just improve and to think. Coming up next, it's Dr. Jack Rasmus and Alternative Visions, a great program, and we'll see each other hopefully on Monday. Bye-bye.